One of the things that I have struggled with in my ministry, and it's coming to quickly 6 years of being pastor here, is how much time that I have to take in studying, quote unquote, controversial subjects. But we must do it. And we will deal with the subject of divorce. And I pray today, as I have prayed in the last 24 hours, in a respectful yet forceful way, a loving way, a graceful way, a humble way, but a truthful way. This is a subject that has affected all of us in one way or another. And today I want us to unpack together Matthew chapter 19, 7 through 12, maybe it's 7 through 9 this morning. But this section, we looked last time at the Lord Jesus' instruction on marriage in response to the question of verse 3. Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every reason? For any reason? Is it lawful for a man, now I want to emphasize this today, to put away? The words put away in the Greek, by most scholars, have been understood to mean divorce. And to mean divorce in a context of a consummated marriage relationship. Most of us reading this would understand that. The way Jesus' answer unfolds points to us that it is a consummated marriage relationship. When they asked him, when they tried to trick him, understand, that's what he understood them to say. That's what they understood him to say. And as we'll see later, that's what his disciples understood him to say. Why am I emphasizing that? You'll see in a little while. And he answered and said unto them, and he answered, by the way, not in a way they would have imagined, and not in a way you would have answered, and not in a way I would have answered, because he did not answer with marriage, as we said last week. That's not where he started. He started, have you not read, and they would have, that he, God, which made them at the beginning, and he doesn't say, married, you know, that they got married, that comes, but he says, he begins, he made them two distinct genders, male and female, period. And we went back and looked in Genesis. So we have one man, we have one woman. And he said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain, they two, shall be one flesh. So now we have one man, one woman, one flesh. Wherefore they are no more two, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let no man put asunder for life. So we talked about all that last week. And the most important thing that I mentioned last week is the same exact thing I'm going to mention this week. Marriage is not about you. Marriage is not about me. Marriage, primarily and foremost, is about God. And until we see that, and until husband and wives understand that, and led by the husband sees that, we are going to continue to struggle with this in percentages in the church that are unfathomable. And sadly, we are affected by this right now. It's ongoing. And it continues to happen. So we looked at that last time. We looked at the male and female and the marriage, the cleaving and the one flesh, and the fact that the most important understanding about marriage is it a covenantal relationship. And it pictures perfectly the Trinity. It pictures Christ and the church. But the Pharisees were not so easily pushed away, were they? And they were trying to trick him. I want you to notice verse 3 again. The Pharisees came unto him, tempting him, tricking him. They were trying to set the trap. We know they like to do this. So they come to him again. And we're going to call this, Is Divorce Okay? That's the title. And they come to him with a second question here in verse 7. They said unto him, why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away? And this is the easiest part of the message. They came with a second question. That's the easy part. From here on out, it gets a lot more difficult. But the Pharisees now ask Jesus, essentially, why did Moses give, now we'll notice, command? Why did they command to divorce? As we said last week, they were trying to trap him into siding with one rabbi, Hillel, versus another, Shammai. Let me tell you at the outset, though, before I unpack this today, let me tell you, God hates divorce. God doesn't condone divorce. He doesn't like it. It's not his method. It never was, and it never will be. Well, you say, Pastor Randy, so what's going to happen here today? What is unfolding? It seems like that let me repeat to you, God never commands, God never condones divorce. And when Malachi wrote, that is the truth. And I stand on that because it's the word of God. But does he acknowledge it? Does he allow for it in a sinful world? That's ultimately the question we need to answer. Because I think it is right and it is honest to say that God's plan, because, and how do I know this? I'm not making this up. The text tells me that God's plan was never for divorce. We just saw that last week. And again, if you weren't here, you need to go back and listen to it. But he just said that. What therefore God hath joined together, let no man put asunder. The plan was not for divorce. That's not the way God works. We have a whole book in the Bible, don't we? A prophet, Hosea, who had an unfaithful wife. And if you know anything about Hosea and that understanding, Hosea perhaps had a right, but he chose a different way. Let me tell you today, and do not leave here today saying that Pastor Randy thinks that God is for divorce. Now turn to Deuteronomy chapter 24 because we want to see what the law taught. Let me also tell you this morning, there aren't a lot of references to divorce in the law. There are some. And there are some specific things. But the main passage that we have to turn to is Deuteronomy 24. And so let's do that this morning. And I'm going to have a few points up here today. And there's kind of some subsections in your notes. And so as we go through here, we're going to try to fill in the blanks. They're right off the PowerPoint. No tricks here. Just like normal. So you can just, if you don't know where what the answer is and you weren't listening for half a second, just look up the PowerPoint. And we will have to go somewhat rapidly through some of these things if we want to finish by 2 o'clock with this part of the message. But Deuteronomy chapter 24, we find when a man hath taken a wife and married her. Let me ask you a question. Was this a marriage?
Yes.
Thank you. And it came to pass that she find no favor in his eyes, because he hath found some uncleanness in her, then let him write her a bill of divorcement and give it in her hand and send her out of his house. And when she departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. And if the latter husband hate her and write her, that's the second husband, if we want to say, a bill of divorcement and giveth it in her hand and sendeth her out of his house. And if the latter husband, if the latter husband die, that second one, which took her to be his wife, her first husband, former one, which sent her away, which divorced her, may not take her again to be his wife. After that, she is defiled. For that is abomination before the Lord, and thou shalt not cause the land to sin, which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance. Now the King James, to be honest, does not do justice to part of verse 1. You can look at all the other major translations of the English that we have, and you will see something immediately different than what the King James says. And to be honest, the King James does not translate the Hebrew properly. Now, I'm not a Hebrew scholar, but I've read enough in this process to understand that they quite didn't get it right. And in this process, if you read the other translations, the other normal English ones that we would have, the New American Standard, the ESV, those others, you will find a subtle difference in verse number one. But let me tell you today, right at the outset of Deuteronomy chapter 24, number one, it is about marriage. Number two, it talks about divorce. Number three, there's only one commandment. And what Moses is writing in Deuteronomy, by the way, near the end of his life, is he is saying, and he is advocating, or he is saying that there is, he is trying to make a point. And it centers not on verse 1, but it actually centers on verse 4. And you have to understand that, or you're not going to understand where any of this is going today. Now, we'll come back to that, but let's just talk through verse 1. Now, first thing I want you to see in verse 1, it says, divorce was allowed for uncleanness. It says, when a man takes a wife and marries her, and it comes to pass that she finds no favor in his eyes because he hath found some uncleanness. Let me tell you that in Moses' time, as in Jesus' time, divorce had become all too commonplace for lots of frivolous reasons. Like burnt toast. The wife burnt the husband's toast. Divorce time. Frivolous reasons. Now, we know that Jesus straightens it out and tells us why it was, and we'll see that in a little bit. But we see that she found no favor in his eyes. Men had a low view of women often, so they used many excuses to get rid of their wives so that they could marry a new woman. And if a man wanted to move on, he just did. Ultimately, I believe it was happening because the man had passion and lust for somebody that wasn't his wife. That was really the central cause. And it was not a coincidence that this subject, and we'll deal with this in just a minute, or in a few hours, comes on the heels of the verses on what subject in the Sermon on the Mount. You know, Jesus discusses in two verses, Matthew 5, 31 and 32, the subject of divorce. But do you know what it comes on the heels of? You know what the prior section right before, and many scholars believe that the subject that he deals with right before the Sermon on the Mount, that where he dealt on divorce, they are connected. And I now believe they are as well. But it's the subject of adultery. So what did Moses mean by uncleanness? Well, here's what I can tell you what it didn't mean. It didn't mean adultery. Because adultery was not, in this time, punishable by giving a certificate of divorce. It was punishable by a much... in fact, this would cause the marriage to end. Would we not say? Because what was the punishment for adultery?
Stoning.
Death. We also know it isn't other of certain types of sexual sin, because those also were punishable by death. And we won't take the time to look up those, but you understand that, especially if you as adults. So it's a difficult phrase to understand. Scholars have struggled, but in the Hebrew, here's what it means. It's up here. It means some, quote unquote, manner of nakedness, unquote. But it may not refer specifically to sexual sin, because those would have been punishable by death. But here's the equivalent. A shameful thing. A shameful thing. Genesis chapter 2, verse 25, and 3, verse 7 and 10 mention this same phraseology. But we know that the Mosaic law stated that adultery must be dealt with by death, and anything less than adultery was, listen, not grounds for divorce. And if a husband, and we know it here, listen to me. If a husband chose for some shameful, some translators are say obnoxious, some obnoxious thing that the wife had done, if they chose that, you know what happened? Do you know what happens? And by the way, the text assumes that remarriage is inevitable. We know that because it's what the text says. Watch. So we're going to say uncleanness is something less than adultery. It's some shameful thing, something that is done to cause no favor in the husband's eyes. He writes a bill of divorcement. We'll talk about that in just a minute. He gives it to her, and he sends her out of the house. Now, remarriage is assumed by the one that has been just given the divorce certificate. Why? Because that's what the text tells us. And when she departed out of the house, watch, she may be another man's wife. Remarriage is assumed. But there's an issue. And I want you to hear this out today. Because divorce actually creates adultery. Jesus says this over and over in the Gospels. We'll point that in just a minute. But divorce creates adultery. You understand that. I don't need to quote the text. You understand that in our society, if a divorce happens, and then there is, and I'm not talking about, quote unquote, a legitimate divorce, but if there's just a divorce for whatever reason in our society, that's going to create more adultery, assuming there's a remarriage. Understood? That makes sense. Jesus says that in the text over and over in the Gospels, Luke and Mark, even in Matthew. But as I said last week, let's step back just a moment, that when Jesus was dealing with this, there were two schools, Rabbi Hillel and Rabbi Shammai. They were famous first century Jewish scholars. Hillel took a view, and it was much more lax, and he said the husband could divorce his wife for almost any reason. While Shammai took the stricter view and said Moses was speaking only about sexual sin. Now, I bring that back up right here at this point because let me tell you something this morning, that no matter what way Jesus answered, one would think he'd be trapped. We've heard that before, right? He'd be given two perspectives, and then you would think if he answers this side, then the other side's going to be upset. But if he answers, you get it. Same thing here. Now, Jesus is going to brilliantly get out of it by coming up with a better answer than either one. But let me tell you today, if he took the lax view, by the way, the majority of the Pharisees in Jesus' time took the lax view. They believed it was okay to divorce for almost any reason. If he took that, who would he have upset at him? The stricter view. But if Jesus said divorce was only okay for adultery, do you remember earlier in the book of Matthew a situation where a famous person got a little perturbed about an adulterous relationship? Does this ring a bell to anybody? I'm not giving you too many clues, but thank you. And what happened to John the Baptist when he got upset when he talked about an adulterous relationship? Off went his head. See, Pastor Randy, what does that have to do with here? Do you think the Pharisees knew that? And if Jesus were to say that divorce was okay for adultery and he were to come down, they would just say, he's just like John the Baptist. We're done with him. Off with his head. And so Jesus was really put in a very difficult situation here. And so one would think he is going to be trapped. And the more you think about this situation and what's unfolding in Matthew 19, you realize that what answer Jesus does give really makes sense. You know, I've struggled with this issue for most of my life. And it wasn't until the past couple of months as I began to study for this that I wrapped my mind around it. I have struggled with this passage of Scripture. Hours of struggling. Talking, thinking, praying, reading. What does the text say? Martin Lloyd-Jones, in his great book on the Sermon on the Mount, and we'll look at the Sermon on the Mount in just a minute, says the Mosaic, quote, the Mosaic legislation, therefore, was introduced, going back to Deuteronomy 24, in order to regularize and control a situation that had not only become chaotic, but was grossly unfair to women, and which, in addition, led to untold and endless suffering on the part of both women and the children. And by the way, things haven't changed a whole lot for this day. I'm not saying that sometimes women are not at fault. Sometimes they are. But I will say this, that the majority of why divorce is happening in our society and in our church lays at the feet of the man. And while statistics of pornography are increasing for women, the reality of things like pornography and quote-unquote affairs and adultery and whatever you want to call it resides more at the side and foot of the male. And who is left out to dry? The mother and the children. The wife. And she's cast out for somebody else. And she has to fend for herself and work hard. And I, for one, think the hardest single job for anybody in this society is for a mother, a single mother, to try to raise her children and also to try to make enough money to make ends meet. And so the foot where this lies is was a failure for the majority of us as the male population. Because we are more about ourselves, and we are more about our passions, and we are more about our lusts. I'm talking about in the church here. I'm not talking about out there. We're more, and it applies out there too, but it's more about us, our passions, our lust, what we want, and we fiddle around with things that are make-believe. We fiddle with things that God says are abomination to him. We let our pride, our hard-headedness get in the way of what a marriage should look like. It's not perfect, by the way. I'm not saying we're calling us on perfect marriages. And so women and children are often the ones that lose in this. Well, ultimately everybody loses. Because the man loses too when he fails to be the leader in the home and goes after this person or thinks that the grass is greener on the other side. Am I passionate about this? I am, because I've seen this unfold too many times and I'm sick of it. Notice what the man does. That was a side note. Notice in chapter 24 of Deuteronomy in verse 1, notice what this man has to do. The law said he had to do this. If he was going to choose this divorce, by the way, this is not God making him do it. This is him making a choice. And he is fulfilling his passion, his lust, most likely for another woman. And he comes up with something. She burned my toast. Whatever it was, it wouldn't be that then. But by the time it was in Jesus' time, it would have been. Whatever obnoxious thing. Now watch. Moses had, that man had to do something. It was in the front of witnesses, by the way. He couldn't just write it by himself. Some witnesses had to be. He had to write an official legal document, a bill of divorcement. And this would protect the woman. Let's say she didn't have a bill of divorcement. If she didn't have a bill of divorcement, then we could be assumed that she had committed adultery. If she had committed adultery, if he was divorcing her, let's just say he didn't have that bill, it would be assumed that it could be adultery. And what happens to her? If it wasn't adultery, but it would be assumed by those around, she'd be killed. So it's protect the woman. Also, it could be there could be a charge of unfaithfulness or adultery, but also, if she didn't have this paper, accusations could fly and they could be false. Slander might follow. She would be accused of running away from her home and her husband. When in reality, it wasn't true. It was the husband doing that to her. Let me tell you today that the text itself is not about that part. Because the only command in this text resides in verse 4. There is no command for the husband to come up with some reason, whatever it was, uncleanness, to say he had to divorce his wife. That's simply not true. And that Moses is not writing in Deuteronomy chapter 24 this. He's not saying he has to do this. It's a command. No. In fact, that's not even the emphasis. The emphasis is on verse 4, and it's the command in verse 4. Now listen. She goes. Remarriage is assumed, verse 2. She goes and is another man's wife. She has the bill of divorcement. This was allowable, not commanded. She didn't have to get remarried, but it was assumed. Verse 3, if the second, I'm going to call it the second husband, hate her. Pretty strong word. And now he wants to be rid of her. He goes and writes a bill of divorcement. What a mess. And he gives it to her hand and he sends her out of his house. Or if he died, notice what happens. Her former husband, and here is what Moses is emphasizing, her former husband who had divorced her in the first lay. Here it is. command cannot take her to be his wife. That's the emphasis here. So let me ask you why. Why, and it's the question we have to get to the bottom of it to understand Matthew 19. Why is it he cannot take her to be his wife again? You got to answer this. And the answer is right in the text. He says, and the emphasis is on verse 4. Sound like I'm repeating myself, but I want to make sure you got that. He may not take her to be his wife after she is defiled. Can I say this? In God's eyes, marriage is permanent, but you know what? Here, you know what else is permanent? That divorce to that original husband. Maybe you hadn't thought of that. Even that divorce to the first husband is permanent. This is the central meaning in the text to Deuteronomy 24. But notice what the word defiled means. The word defiled, it's the last point I believe up here. The word defiled was used in Leviticus 18, verse 20, of a man who had committed adultery. That is key to where we're going today. The word defiled was used of a man who committed adultery. Now, this isn't a man here, it's the woman. But in Leviticus, we find that this same word was used of somebody who committed adultery. You know what I'm saying today? Here's the reason why he could not get his old wife back. Because, hear me out, she was now an adulteress. Now, that might come as a shock to you, but I didn't make that up. That's what the text says. In fact, we know it because what does God say? He says, for that is an abomination before the Lord. You say, Pastor Randy, it's not her fault. I agree. She did not willingly make herself an adulteress. He made her, his first husband made her an adulteress by writing up this certificate and coming up with these silly reasons. And let me say it again, divorce breeds adultery. And I'll show you in the Gospels, that's what Jesus says. I'm not blaming the wife for becoming an adulterer. But because remarriage is assumed that logically, okay, she's been cast out of the house. Is her time up? Can she not be married anymore? The text says she can. But it actually creates an adulteress. And that is the very reason why the first husband cannot have her come back in. Because it is an abomination before the Lord. If you don't see that today, you will probably not understand where we're going in the rest of this. Now let's go back to the text in Matthew, and just a moment. That the passage in Deuteronomy is actually saying that if a man divorces a woman for anything other than adultery, uncleanness, for instance, he is causing his wife to commit adultery. And if that man divorced for any other reason, he is defiling her. And we know that because Deuteronomy 24:4 says he can't take back his former wife because that would be an abomination to take back an adulteress. So divorce has made her an adulteress. Divorce leads to adultery. And divorce leads to adultery all over the place. You know what the law actually did? Hear me out today. The law actually created very narrow parameters within which divorce was prohibited. But by the time we get to Jesus' day, the Pharisees had so messed up things, had so interpreted things, they said, nope, the law actually says divorce can be for anything. That's not what we're seeing here in Deuteronomy chapter 24. And to be honest, the hard line of Deuteronomy chapter 24 is no divorce at all. Because God never commands it. So I will again say what I said last week. And I will say what Jesus said, and you can turn back to Matthew 19. I will say it again. God's design for man and woman was for them to marry for life. And it is only because of sin that divorce is brought into the discussion. And it was a last resort, not something that should have been done on a whim. But by this time, that's what had happened in Jesus' day. God never condones it. He never commands it. It's not his way. It's not his desire. It's not his method. In fact, a better option than divorce, even if adultery is acceptable, would be to do what Hosea did. And do you know what Hosea did? He was willing to forgive and redeem his guilty partner. Now let's see what Jesus says in Matthew 19. Let's see if this matches up to what I just said in Deuteronomy 24. See, Pastor Randy, I think I might see where you're going with it, but I think I'm also a little lost. Let's find out what Jesus said. Maybe this will help us. So they ask him the question. This is clearly from Deuteronomy 24. I can't show you any other text that says what this is saying. Clearly they were referring to that. Okay, all scholars, wherever you come down on what we're about, just the most controversial part, agree that Deuteronomy 24 is the background text. I have looked and read other people's opinions and beliefs on what the exception clause is, and everybody goes back to Deuteronomy 24. The problem is they agree that it's Deuteronomy 24 and it's marriage there, but all of a sudden things change here. We need to say, are we going to be true to the text or not? Verse 8, and here is Jesus' answer. He said unto them, Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, and here it comes, here's the phrase, while there's lots of divides, except it be for fornication, that's where we have the big divide in our conservative churches, what does that mean? And shalt marry another, committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her which is put away, doth commit adultery. There's a lot of committing adultery when there's divorce. I just read it. Did you hear it? I say unto you, whosoever put away his wife, forget the exception clause, as Mark and Luke do, by the way. They don't have the exception clause. It says, and shall marry another, commits adultery. So divorce causes more adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away, commits adultery. What did I say? Divorce leads to more adultery. So what were the Pharisees trying to do? They were trying to say that Jesus was contradicting the law of Moses. The leaders were saying that if God made marriage permanent at creation, and isn't that what Jesus just said? Did he just say marriage is permanent? Yes. Beginning at creation? Yes. Then why did Moses? Notice verse 7. Command! I know you're not Hebrew scholars, and I'm not one either, and I'll admit to that, and you can admit to it too. I'll just admit it for you. Maybe Alvin is, but outside of that, most of you, I doubt, are Hebrew scholars. And I don't think any of us would probably claim to be. But the reality is, Deuteronomy 24, God never commanded it. But that's how they were saying it was. Moses never commanded it. Never. It's not there. You can't twist the text enough to make it say that. It's just impossible. So you know what they were doing? They were twisting it to fit their view. The leaders were saying, if God made marriage permanent at creation, why did Moses command an exception, a provision for this uncleanness? But God hadn't commanded it. God had allowed it, but God had never commanded it. And that's a big difference. Moses had instituted that legislation near the end of his life. It was, by the way, not created at Mount Sinai as part of the original law. So why did he have to make this? Why did he do this? Why did he allow for divorce? Well, Jesus tells us. Look at verse 8. Moses did this. He didn't command it, but he allowed it. Because of the hardness of your heart. The word hardness up here means stubborn, completely unyielding. And it's the Greek word that I can't translate very well, but we do get the word heart and sclerosis from it. Okay? Sclerocardia. And you can hear it, cardiac and sclerosis. Hardness of the heart. That makes sense. Okay? And the word showed the obstinate hearts that the children of Israel were displaying in the wilderness. We know that. You can study those first five books, especially Exodus, as they're coming out, and Deuteronomy, and some of those. We know the stories. Paul writes of it in Corinthians chapter 10, I believe. And if there's anybody more stubborn than a Jew, I'd like to meet him. And if you would like to meet a stubborn Jew, wait till my dad comes back. Jews are stubborn, naturally. But they were really stubborn in the wilderness. And Jesus said that Moses did this because their hearts were stubborn. They were completely unyielding. Sounds like what we got going on today in a lot of marriage relationships. Stubbornness, unyieldedness, lack of forgiveness, as we talked about a few weeks ago. So what does this all mean? Jesus said, the plan from the beginning was not divorce. When God created man and woman, by the way, everything was perfect, quote unquote. Everything was really good. But you know what? At first there was no sin, but that didn't last very long. And by the way, there was no need for divorce if there was no sin at the beginning. But that didn't last long. Man's heart became hard. It was filled with rebellion and sin. We know that as we've studied through the book of Genesis in our Sunday school class. And the sinful attitude of the Jewish people led Moses to have to invoke this law. Not a command, didn't have to. They didn't have to divorce. But because sin had become so rampant and because they were so hard-hearted, he put this in place, and he put it in place to protect women and children. So divorce and a bill of divorcement were allowed. Deuteronomy 24 makes that clear. Then to temporarily rectify an out-of-control situation that had developed because of the hard-heartedness exhibited by the Israelites. And if a marriage was going to be discontinued and dissolved, it had to be done in a correct way. That's what Moses was saying. It's happening, but we got to regulate it. Not make you do it. In fact, we'd rather not. We'd rather you go by the original standard, the original ideal, which was in the garden, which was from creation. And we see that because Jesus said divorce was not part of God's plan at creation, but it was allowed within these narrow parameters for a short period of time. Now let's look at verse 9. And by the way, he says that, but from the beginning it was not so. He is saying at the beginning of time, there was the hardness of the heart. It was no need for divorce. Creation, it wasn't needed. But that's what's unfolded. He's just telling the facts. This is what's happened. And by now it's gotten a lot worse. Because any reason was up. The Pharisees were pushing for it. Verse 9. And I say unto you, you know what? I got something to say to you. I've let Genesis speak. I've let God speak through Genesis chapters 1 and 2. I've let Deuteronomy speak, but I've got something I want to say. Jesus always had something to say. By the way, he didn't have to say very much, and he got his point across. And I say unto you, one verse, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And you know this verse, we've read it, so let's get to the bottom of it. What does the text say? Well, what does the text say? It's clear. I often wondered if I should turn my Bible upside down and maybe it will say something different. I have to take what the text says. The problem is, what does the word fornication actually mean? That is the big issue at hand. So I'm glad you asked. Let's talk about that. Fornication. Because Jesus goes on to say, except for fornication, if he divorces his wife, except it's for that single reason. That's pretty narrow. And marries another woman, there's adultery that is committed. And the only reason that divorce was permitted by Christ, according to this verse, was for fornication. Now here comes the problem. What does the word fornication mean? I wish I could have a class in here that never heard the word and never heard the definition, and we just took it at face value, because that would really do some help. But to be honest, can I say today that some people have twisted this to mean a thing that they believe that the Bible never really says. And they have put their preconceived notion into it and added that first. And they would never do that anywhere else, but they've done it here. You'll see what I mean. The word fornication is the Greek word porneia. from which we get pornography. And it literally means, it's up here, a broad form of sexual sin, and it included prostitution, it included adultery, it included all kinds of sexual unfaithfulness, it was premarital, extramarital, and abnormal sexual relations. But within the marriage context, and that's what we're talking about, right? Deuteronomy was about marriage, right? Jesus was talking about marriage, right? So fornication within the marriage context would be what? Adultery. You can't take it any other way. You say, well, Pastor Randy, the word adultery is not used here in the Greek. We'll get to that in just a moment. Let me tell you this. There are other places where the word fornication is used, and it's no doubt within a marriage relationship, and it refers to adultery. So it's possible it could be that here. And it's very obvious that's what it is. What's the problem, by the way, with fornication, or let's call it adultery, because that's in the one flesh relationship. That's in the marriage relationship. What is the problem with that? Why is Jesus saying that's the only exception? He is saying it because it perverts the one flesh relationship. It destroys the one flesh relationship. The problem is we don't take it very seriously anymore. We've allowed the culture to dictate that sexual sin within the marriage is allowed. Or we've allowed the culture to dictate that divorce can be for other reasons. Now, let me say this. The reason, and this only reason that I believe that Jesus was allowing, was for adultery. Martin Lloyd-Jones said that the person who is guilty of adultery has broken the bond and has become united to another person. Now, there are three reasons, if not four, three plausible explanations for this word fornication that conservative scholars put out there. Several of them put it out there because they say the Bible never condones divorce, or that Jesus never allowed for it. Here they are. I got them up here real quick. We've got to finish this up. There are three explanations. You can click on them all quickly. Unfaithfulness in the betrothal period. We're going to talk about that mostly. Second, the one that I'm talking about, fornication / adultery. And third is an incestuous relationship. Most scholars don't hold to that view. I'm not going to take any time on that view. If you want to study that out, you'll have to on your own time, but the passages are up there. Each one faces its own challenges, as would be understood. Good scholars disagree. People in this church disagree. But I want to take a close consideration to two things. Number one, the use of the context. Let me ask you, is the context talking about marriage in this passage? The argument that it's betrothal is nowhere to be found until right here. It's been marriage up to this point. Deuteronomy has been about marriage. All this has been about marriage, and all of a sudden they're going to throw that this word fornication now means betrothal. We would never do that anywhere else in the scriptures. At least I can think of. And if we dare start that precedent, we are going to get ourselves into some stuff that we don't want to get into. And let me tell you, it's happened in a lot of other places. We take one word and we wrap it into what we think it is and we rip it out of its context. And most good scholars who would hold to the betrothal view and that's what it means here, and divorce is never allowed for any reason, would not want that be done anywhere else. So first of all, it's the context. We find that Jesus is condemning this divorce except for fornication in a marriage relationship. That's the first thing, the use of the context. The second thing is the broad use of the word porneia, which strikes at the one flesh relationship. So let's look at the one. Unfaithfulness in the betrothal period, that's this section right here. And let's look at the pro arguments real quickly. The people who say that this word fornication is only referring to the time of the engagement period. That if somebody were to commit fornication in the betrothal period, that's what Jesus was talking to. Here are, I tried to find their best arguments. Number one, they say that the word for Greek and for adultery is not used here, and that is true. There's another Greek word for adultery. And so if Jesus was wanting it to be adultery, he would have used the word adultery. That's very good argument. Second of all, the Jews often said, and this gospel was written to the Jews, that the betrothal period was as good as marriage. You've heard that. They take it very seriously, and they do. To break up an engagement in the Jewish culture, this is serious. It was as if they were married. Now, they weren't officially consummated. They weren't officially married, but it was as good as married. We've heard that. I think there's truth to that. Thirdly, the pro people to this say, well, there's an illustration used in Matthew of an engagement that is broken, could be potentially broken off. And you remember it, right? In Matthew chapter 1. You can go back there, Matthew chapter 1 and verse number 19. And we see Joseph, her husband. Now, he's heard that she's with child. And he's thinking, how could she? Something doesn't add up, okay? She's with child, but it's not because of me. So it must be because it's somebody else. That's the background. That makes sense. That's logical. He doesn't grasp the understanding of the virgin conception or the Holy Spirit conception. So Joseph, her husband, being a righteous man and not willing to make her a public example, was minded to divorce her. So the pro-betrothal people say, Matthew chapter 1, here's the illustration. Matthew even uses it himself. It's got to be that. Okay? Here's the last one I want to mention. The fourth pro reason that it could be betrothal is that Matthew is the only mention of the exception clause. And because he gave the only exception of the betrothal period, possibility of divorce. Now, we know that that divorce didn't happen, but Joseph had that option. It's clear. Then this must be it. Mark and Luke, here's another one you could add. Nobody else ever uses the exception clause. Let me ask you, how many times does God have to say something for it to be true? Do you know what? Jesus said it twice, as I'm about to show you, because this isn't the only passage in Matthew. It only takes, and all those people would say that too. Now let's move on to the next thing. Those are the pro reasons. Let's move to the general thoughts. Here's a couple general thoughts about this betrothal period. We must understand that fornication was used more broadly than unfaithfulness in the betrothal period. So let's just say that it is the betrothal period. So you're telling me that every time the word fornication is used in the Bible, it's used in the betrothal period? Absolutely not. And if you want to say that, you're opening yourself up for a whole lot more can of worms than what you're asking for. So if you're going to say that, it's only for that. That means if every time I find the word fornication in the Bible, it only refers to the engagement period. Uh-oh, we got a problem. And we know it isn't. The word means, here's what the word fornication means. It means unfaithfulness on the part of one party or another. It was used of sexual sin within a marriage and outside a marriage. And Greek scholars always included adultery as one of those pieces within the marriage context, as an aspect of it. But it also included bestiality, homosexuality, premarital and sexual illicit relationships within a marriage, and a few other things that I'm not going to note today. That's enough. And most of those, you know what, as far as I could tell, you know what, under the law, you know what the results were for those things? Death. Now let's look at the con, next slide, the con to the betrothal, the kind of the anti against the betrothal period. First of all, I've already given it to you, this passage so far to this point has never been about an engagement period. No Greek scholar thought it that way. I have searched Greek dictionaries, I have searched commentaries, and trust me, I have searched. And I cannot find a single one that says Jesus, when he said, have you not read that he which made them male and female, for this cause shall a man leave a father and mother, shall cleave to his wife, that they twain shall be one flesh, refers to the engagement period. It's just impossible. You can't find it. So all of a sudden we get to verse 9 and we say, Jesus says, except it be for fornication, that means the betrothal period, but he wasn't referring to that before. That's dangerous territory to be on. In my opinion. Let me continue. Not only that, the context argues for the words put away to mean divorce. Whenever Jesus used the word, and he used it, by the way, whoever shall put away the divorce was always referring to a consummated marriage. Now, in Matthew 1, we have the betrothal period. But in all of these, Matthew, Mark, Luke, Corinthians, we'd always say it was referring to a consummated marriage. We would not all of a sudden say it was referring to something else. Many Greek and Hebrew lexicons, maybe 12, maybe 15, how many you want to pick? All of them agree, as far as I can tell, that these words, where it says put away, means divorce of a consummated marriage relationship. The normal use of the Jewish mind here was divorce of marriage. If it was betrothal, don't you think Jesus would have used it that way? The Jews understood, the disciples, by the way. Notice what he says, they say in verse 10. We'll have to do it this afternoon because we're so late. His disciples said unto him, in this case, the man, if the case of the man be so with his wife, it is not good to what? To marry. Not be engaged? No, to marry. It's what it's referring to here. And so saying that it means unfaithfulness in the betrothal period is to add something that plainly is not in this passage. And frankly, I think we are in dangerous territory when we make it, when we say that way. And I understand my own parents hold to that view. I understand that some of you may hold to that view. I respect all of them. I respect you. This is where I've come with my studies. I respect that. I love my parents. I love you guys. If you hold to that, I do not want to put people down. I'm still learning. What I want us to all agree on is that God holds marriage much higher than where we have come to today in our churches. And I know that for my parents is the case. And I know that for others who may hold that whatever view here, if it's different than where I've come. So let's come back. Let's put this all together. And we need to get to Matthew 5. But divorce was a concession by God. And you know what it also was? It was a concession by God. He allowed it. He didn't command it. But it was actually an evidence of grace. Because we got a problem. What couldn't happen if adultery was committed? What couldn't happen in Jesus' time? Do you know? Aha. This is where we get into a little bit more of a knot. We don't understand the time. The Romans did not allow the Jews to carry out executions anymore of their own people. So you know what had been what replaced adultery for death at this time? The grace of God allowed the person to live, and it was divorce. Was allowed, not commanded. But it was allowed. So there was actually evidence of some grace when adultery was committed at this point in time, because you couldn't bring him to the rock pile. The Romans wouldn't allow the Jews to do that. Executions had been stopped. The power to take another's life had been removed from the Jews at this point. And so divorce had replaced death for the sin of adultery. And we know that because isn't that what Joseph said? Joseph could have sent Mary to the rock pile, but he doesn't say that. He says, I will put her, he understands he couldn't do that. He understands that divorce is his option. And he was going to do it privately, by the way. Okay, one last thing. I just have half a page of notes. Bear with me. Matthew chapter 5. Let me see if I can put this all together. Because if we go to Matthew 5, which is the other passage, and Matthew chapter 5, the Sermon on the Mount, I think we get this, at least it came to me as I studied this passage. So Matthew 5, last part of your notes, before we get to the disciples' response, which we'll do this afternoon. Matthew 5, let me read this. It's been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. That's what they said. All the Sermon on the Mount, all these different things, murder, reconciliation, adultery, divorce, oaths, non-resistance, the law, all of these things, it was they said, then I say. We've talked about that. So it hath been said, this is what you say, you have heard, but I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, except for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery. Now I want you to back up. Let me ask you a question. According to Jesus, is adultery wrong? Yes. According to the Pharisees, was adultery wrong? Yes. We know that because in verse 27, that's what they said. Jesus says, you have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. The Pharisees, here's what they would do. They'd piously, yes, we agree. We should not commit adultery. And we aren't. But Jesus says what? Go on. But I say unto you, that the understanding of what you think about adultery is different than what is the spirit of the law and the main ideal. Oh yes, you don't commit the outward physical act, but I say unto you that whenever you look on a woman to lust after her and you do that in your heart, you do that on the inside, you are actually committing adultery with her already in your heart. And then he goes on immediately, he has a couple more verses, he goes on immediately says, whosoever put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. And the only reason that you can do that is except for adultery. Adultery is wrong. Adultery breaks the marriage bond. And Jesus is now saying exactly what Moses said. He's saying, if you divorce for any other reason than adultery, you are going to make the innocent wife an adulteress, and you're creating more adultery. And that is not God's ideal. It never was, and it never will be. And he's saying to the Pharisees, and he's turning to them, as he is saying, verse 32, and he's saying to them, don't say we don't commit adultery, but at the same time actually commit adultery by allowing divorce for any reason. Do you get that? If you allow a divorce for any old reason, then you are actually causing that wife who's going to assume remarriage here is going to become an adulteress. There's adultery all over the place, as I said earlier, because of divorce. So don't come to me saying we're all righteous and we don't commit adultery when, first of all, you commit it inside. And you lust after a woman. And second of all, you allow for divorce for any reason. And you're forcing other people to become adulterers. And so Jesus says, you see the Pharisees, you think you're okay because the law allowed it. But Jesus takes them not back to the law. He takes them back to the standard of the law, to the ideal of the law. And that was creation. And ultimately, the law that they're coming up with, did you know what? The law that Moses allowed for was not the best they could do. What was the best they could do? The best they could do was the standard of Genesis chapters 1 and 2. And that's exactly what Jesus did. You see, the standard of Genesis is actually better than the Mosaic law. And that's what he took them to. And the standard is no divorce. Now, the law made exception, yes. But Jesus, in Matthew 19, is actually taking them back to the ideal, the standard. So I believe, according to Matthew chapter 19 and Matthew chapter 5, that there's only one biblical grounds for divorce. Now, I know the big question is going to come up after me, potentially, is what about this situation? What about that situation? I've studied through Matthew. I understand we have a 1 Corinthians passage that we'll some year get to, I'm certain. But in Matthew, as far as I can tell, there's one exception, and it is for adultery. And the point, as John MacArthur says in his sermon, and I'm quoting now, the point of Deuteronomy 24 is not to advocate divorce for uncleanness, but to show how a man divorced his wife for less than adultery, and all he did was defile everybody. When she remarried, and by the way, the Bible assumes remarriage, it is inevitable, unquote. And the only reason that Jesus allowed for it was because it's the only reason that breaks the one flesh relationship. You say, Pastor Randy, the Israelites committed spiritual adultery. So if I make the claim that my spouse has committed spiritual adultery, is that a grounds for divorce? No. What is spiritual adultery? Idolatry. like the children of Israel did with to the Lord? The answer is no. It's talking about physical adultery, not spiritual, not idolatry, not this reason, not that reason. It's for this reason. I pray that I presented this humbly, faithful to the text. We have a conclusion. It'll come at the next sermon. Marriage is always the right way for life. That is what God's plan. Marriage should be about God. Divorce is a concession that's been allowed because of man's sin. And we need to be stronger on this subject than what we've been. We're strong on certain things like homosexuality. We need to be stronger on the seriousness of this. But I say men need to step up to the plate.